In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hatch.
Hello, and welcome to the Magical Talking Hat episode 4. I am Tony.
And I'm William.
And hopefully everybody is nice and clear and louder this time. We are trying a new experimental microphone setup that involves covering lamps with blankets and things like that. So hopefully you people will let us know if William sounds better or worse, or if I sound better or worse or whatever. Although I should say, remember the last episode we had the big talk about the feedback and everything?
Yes.
None.
Really?
So apparently the answer is the public has spoken and they've said, look, we don't want to talk to you. We just want to listen to you. So shut up and do the podcast.
Just do it.
Loud and clear, people. We are not worried about that.
But of course, we do want to be heard, so
absolutely,
we will play with the audio in whatever ways we need to make sure that happens.
And we want to grow the audience as long as we don't have to do anything. I personally am responsible for 2 new listeners this week. I harassed 2 people at work. And they both listened. One of them told me they never want to be in an elevator with me. And one of them sort of maybe offered a job for us down the road. I don't know. It gets a little bit weird. But
is that because of our first one we talked about being in an elevator with people?
I don't believe that's why he offered us a job. No, that would be
weird. The other person saying they didn't want to be in an elevator with you because of the very first broadcast.
No, that was that conversation, yeah. I think he's scared that we've now shown that being in an elevator is just this guy's torment the whole time. So,
which it is.
Yes. How are you, William?
I'm well.
How was your week?
It was not as productive as I would have liked it to be, but otherwise, good. Fairly uneventful, I guess.
Did you meet anyone interesting on the way over tonight?
No.
Just so you know, the very little feedback I got that was not official was dead split down the middle between people who said, yeah, I was with you, that was a weird opening, and other people who were like, what the hell's wrong with you? That was a totally interesting story and I liked it. It's really 50-50. So, as usual, the public is no help. So,
yeah, when I listened to it, because, obviously with all of the feedback you were giving me during the broadcast, I said, okay, I'm going to listen to this.
He just loves the sound of his own voice, people, much.
I can just go on and on.
He can.
I guess I didn't feel awful about it, but you're right. I probably could have thought of something better to open the.
I felt awful. I cried when I listened to it.
There were things about it that I was unhappy with. Like there were parts of the story I left out that I shouldn't have. And I could have probably, or actually I should have said something about, the tragedy to the victim, of course, this person died and that was a terrible thing. And there's no, I'm not insensitive to that.
Yes.
But it kind of sounded like I was.
Trish pointed out in your story you were assumptive of people's knowledge of the area as though all these people are in Iowa City.
Which
I kind of noticed at the time, but she even caught ones I didn't, where you were like, and then he took a cab all the way to Davenport. And I'm like, some people have no idea how far
that's
that
true.
Is.
That's true.
But then I felt
like I had to explain in detail what the Coralville Corrections facility
Yes,
was.
I found that interesting. For those who don't know, and at this point I think most people do, we are in Iowa City, Iowa, which is the Akron of the Midwest. Wait, Akron's in the Midwest, isn't it?
I think yes.
I had
it is.
No joke for that, people. I was working on it out of nowhere, and it's the Seattle of the Corn Belt.
I don't know. Iowa City is usually, I think what you're trying to get at is that Iowa City is usually considered kind of, in Iowa, it's sort of the cultural center or the, And
it's where the hippies and the gays live.
Yeah, it's liberal and...
Unless you're a hardcore hippie and then you live in a town called Fairfield, which is nearby.
Yeah, that's where the transcendental meditators live.
But yeah, but the just normal hippies and all the gays, like in everywhere, all the gays live in Iowa City.
Iowa is pretty solidly Democratic.
And gay.
But
in our town.
But Iowa City. But I mean, if you go to Des Moines, and you'll run into a lot of Democrats there. But they're more socially conservative, probably. And then you come here, and they're more socially liberal. So
and gay. this is a thing that I was thinking of today, and tell them, now you're not going to have this, but I'm going to ask you anyway. So when a celebrity like comes out as gay, I mean, I guess no one really ever comes out as straight. Do you ever, like, if it's a guy, do you ever get that moment, like, if it's somebody that you really liked, of that moment of disappointment or of that excitement that you're like, dude, maybe now I have like a shot or something?
No.
This is a thing. I don't know what it is. Or like when a woman that like I found attractive and she comes out as lesbian and is like, oh, because it's like, yeah, I totally was gonna date them. Except now it turns out they don't like dudes. I don't know what it is, but like I have a huge crush on Neil Patrick Harris, and when Neil Patrick Harris came out as gay, it was suddenly like, yes, it was like my odds improved from being the wrong gender of somebody he doesn't know at all and is completely unattractive and married and has never met him and never will, to being the right gender of somebody he's never met and completely unattracted to.
Well, now that you mention it, it does seem to be very... I mean, I have noticed this phenomena where people will say, and, you know, about a guy, for example, who's straight, and guess what, ladies, he's single, you know, about some celebrity. And,
yeah.
And I've always thought that was odd because, and there's a response if there's a, you know, if there's an audience of women, there's a response like, yay, you know, great. What are you talking about?
Well,
this doesn't matter at all to you in real life.
But I always have that reaction. Like if it's somebody that I find attractive, and then they come out as gay. Like if it was a dude, it's like suddenly it's like, oh man, like I don't even know what I'm thinking in my head. It's like, oh, if my wife died and I met this person, like I don't even know. Or if it's a woman and they come out as gay, it's like, oh, now I'll never be able to date that movie star like I totally would have before, well, when I knew they were into dick.
If I had to base it on my casual observations, I'd say that your experience is more common than mine. I don't have that response at all.
My experience is always more common than yours, well, William.
I'd be curious to know among our listeners who
I don't,
what they think, because, yeah, that has never occurred to me, so it always surprises me when I see that kind of thing on television and I think, wow, really? The audience is responding that way? That seems really odd, but what you're telling me is you experienced something very similar, so maybe it's
And I have talked to people, and generally they don't seem to experience either. Although it's tricky with guys, because I always use my Neil Patrick Harris example, and they're like, dude, I have no idea what you're talking about. But then I switch over to, like, when an actress comes out as lesbian, and they're like, oh, yeah, I do kind of feel that way. So I think homosexual panic gets in the way.
Well, but I mean, I don't... you know, they find out an actress is lesbian, it doesn't...
You thought you had a shot with Jodie Foster, didn't you?
No.
I missed when Jodie Foster came out, by the way.
I guess I did too.
I also think I missed when Wanda Sykes came out. Like, they just suddenly were lesbians.
Oh, well, no. I think as long as I've known of her, I've known that she was gay. Wanda.
See, no, because I remember watching her stand-up, and it was all about boyfriend stuff, and then she was on Craig Ferguson one night, and she's talking about her wife and their kids, and I was like, huh?
No, I don't think I knew of her when, you know, in that phase of her career, okay. I guess. But no, I don't generally, to me, the marital status or the orientation of a famous person is completely irrelevant. I mean, it never even occurs to me. I mean, that just doesn't occur to me. So, you know, to find out that someone's gay, straight, or whatever, I don't even pre-categorize, I don't think. So there's no assumption ahead of time, you know? So, okay, well, that's what they are, and I don't even think about it.
4 years spent at Grinnell College got me to the point where, for a while, I just assumed everyone was bi. But then I've been out in the real world again now that I'm back to my unconscious and like unintentional assumption that everybody is straight when I meet them.
Well, I mean, it's not that I am so open-minded or something. I just don't think about it at all. Yeah. It just doesn't intrude upon my thoughts. And then, oh, okay.
Sorry, all you celebrities. He's not interested.
Well, there's so many other things to think about in regard to a person, you know, other than...
Like whether they might be into doing you?
Besides that, yes.
Really?
So many other... Yes, of course. There's actually...
Well, I suppose whether or not you'd be into doing them is also something you need to think about.
No, more than that even. In fact, I'm often surprised how much a person's gender is present in a person's... I shouldn't say present, but at the front of a person's mind when they're interacting with someone.
Oh, yeah.
Because even that seems to be one of the least important things about the person right there.
Well, I always found it telling when I learned in college, somebody pointed out, when you hear somebody had a baby, what is the first question you ask?
Oh, well, yeah, what sex the baby was.
Yes. And there's an argument in both ways. On the one hand, what the hell difference does it make, especially at that age, if they're a boy or a girl? But on the other hand, what else are you going to talk about?
Well, because
babies don't have much going on, sure, except maybe some interesting genitalia.
Well, yeah. I mean,
that really sounded better in my head than that came out. That's horrible. I did not mean to imply in any way that I have an interest in any baby's genitalia, and I would just like to apologize. I didn't do a disclaimer. By the way, this episode's going to suck, like them all. Ugh. I got to be honest. I don't know if I can keep this up.
We'll keep what up?
The podcast.
What, just ever or today?
At all. Like,
why? What's...
Ezzy? Jesus. Cat.
You call your cat Jesus?
No, Ezzy Jesus.
Oh. Well, that makes it clearer, so that way you can differentiate from the actual Jesus.
Yes. We got into a big space Jesus conversation on Facebook about how Doctor Who is space Jesus.
Oh.
All this weird stuff. No, I'm just, like, I don't do things at all, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's really weird that I've done this same thing for 4 weeks in a row. That's unlike me. And it's just, it's effort. Not a lot, but still some. And I've thought about it. We have developed an audience pretty solidly of maybe up to 25 people at this point.
Huh.
And I hate them all.
No, you don't.
So much.
Why do you lie like that?
I dream... Even the ones I haven't met about just, you know, killing them in their sleep.
You know, making up stories is one thing, but outright lying about hating people and...
Burning hatred.
No, and the fact that you don't want anyone to listen, that's clearly not true. You're using reverse psychology on everybody.
Dude, you don't know me. you don't know me. I mean,
okay.
Well, you do.
We'll play your game,
still,
then.
I hate them all so much.
I don't hate you. And that's not me kissing up. I really don't hate
you. You know, 5 is going to be a big thing.
Why is that?
Because in podcast world, 5 is the date where you fuck. Like, it's not really, but it's like 5 episodes on time, like in a row, is like the benchmark for like you're serious.
Oh.
I believe I got that off of Happy Jags, and I believe it's completely unfounded. But it makes sense to me. That seems like a good number.
Well, we are serious, so.
I'm not serious.
Okay, I'm serious.
Well, yeah. What else are you going to be? Funny?
I don't know. You know, I picture the people listening drawing like a T-graph, and there's my name on the top on one side and your name on the top on one side, and they write, okay, William's serious, Tony's not, you know. And it's starting to kind of
I
get a little bit on the nose, I think.
I envision a day where it becomes like Twilight and there's like Team Edward and Team Jacob. And
oh, my God.
Seriously, I don't think
No.
I don't think you can have it both ways. I don't think you can like both of us, so.
Well, I don't.
None of our friends like both of us.
Well, that's not true.
They either like you and tolerate me or they like me and make fun of you. I mean, that's pretty much.
Well, maybe that's true, but.
Yeah.
But we like each other.
Pretty much we're each other's, like, emotional baggage made physically manifest for all of our friends. It's like, I got bad news. I would love to hang out with you, but occasionally this other guy is going to show up. And it's like, shit.
But we get along fine.
Yes. I mean, that's because we're not... Actually, I have no idea why that is. On paper, we should not.
Okay,
so if I ever see you on paper, I will fucking kill you.
I'll just avoid paper.
Yes.
That shouldn't be too hard.
Yes.
Like a rock.
So you didn't do anything interesting this week?
I don't do anything interesting any week. I mean, well,
I saw a movie finally.
Well, why don't we talk about that? What movie did you see?
We saw The Tempest last night.
Oh.
I had been wanting to see The Tempest. Julie Taymor did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Helen. They did Prospera instead of Prospero as the character.
Oh.
And it was Helen Mirren.
Oh yeah.
And it was a ton of people. It was Helen Mirren. It was Alfred Molina, Russell Brand, Chris Cooper, Alan Cumming, like big people. And I was very excited. And it had lots of cool special effects and stuff. And I think I might just hate Julie Taymor.
Why?
Because I think she's unbelievably pretentious. A little bit stuck in the 70s. And kind of obsessed with the Beatles in her own sort of obscure way. And well, not too obscure, because she also did Across the Universe, which was the fucking random-ass psychedelic Beatles musical movie. So there kept being songs in this that totally sounded like Oasis or something. So it just, I don't know, it was a mess. And basically most of the problems I had with the film, because the film had good bits in it,
mm-hmm.
and I'm glad I saw it, but most of the issues I had with the film can be put down to the screenplay. Not Shakespeare's fault, but the actual, who adapted it. Because, you know, they cut some stuff out, they had to adjust things and stuff. The screenplay and the directing. And guess who did the screenplay, and guess who directed it? Julie Taymor.
Oh, okay.
And she produced it. And so, it was, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I love Shakespeare. And in particular, this is one of my favorite plays. And I was
really,
not happy. Yes. Pretty much this one and Richard III are probably my favorite Shakespeare plays. That being said, I don't have experience with every play.
Well, have you ever done Shakespeare? Because I don't think I've ever asked you that.
I haven't done Shakespeare. I've read a lot and I've seen a lot.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm one of those nerds who actually will read Shakespeare. And I've enjoyed that. But even for The Tempest, which for those of you who know how weird this is to say, but it seemed very sort of schizophrenic, the film. And I mean, it's inherent in the story that way, but it really did. And it was kind of a mess. It had good bits. I mean, you're not going to need the 2 hours of your life back if you ever choose to see it. And you can get some good stuff out of it, but it was not good. Unless you're high. I think it would be awesome while stoned.
Now, I want to ask you a question that is going to kind of take us off topic. If you were going to do Shakespeare.
Yes.
What would you want to do? And would you want to, like, direct it, or would you want to be in it? And if you were going to be in it, who would you want to play?
Directing might be fun, but I have no real experience or even concept of directing other than ordering you around and Dan. I mean, there are people who just do what I say for reasons I understand, and I order them around. But otherwise, I don't really have a concept of directing. That might be fun. In terms of playing...
Now, I'm asking who you want to play, too. I don't want you to think about who you might be cast as.
Ultimately, Richard III in Richard III
okay.
would probably be my favorite, because I love that part. I'm really fascinated by that part. This is a man... And this is a weird thing. I'm not as huge a Shakespeare fan as a lot of people. That sounded weird. I am not as huge a Shakespeare fan as a lot of big Shakespeare fans you will find. There are things I like about Shakespeare. There are things I really don't like about Shakespeare. But here's the thing. Richard III, within the first act of that play, the man, who already we've established is kind of a jerk and is a gimp, and like he has a club foot, and he's, and like they go to big lengths that he's kind of unattractive and stuff, and nobody really likes him or anything like that. Has killed the earlier guy. He killed Henry V, I guess, sixth. I don't know. He killed somebody. They killed some king. That's why Edward's now on the throne, and this is his brother. He interrupts the funeral procession of this guy that he killed. He personally killed, and talks to that guy's widow. She knows he killed him. He admits it. And in the space of this one scene between the two of them, he convinces her to marry him. And you believe it. Yeah. You buy it. Yeah. He's that conniving and creepy and Machiavellian. It's just awesome. And I love that play. And it's got such great vicious political machinations and stuff in it. And it's really nice. And some really good speeches in it. But the comedies are always fun. I mean, it's hard to say. I like the comedies. I like Midsummer Night's Dream. I like The Tempest. I mean, all the comedies are pretty much one story, but they're all basically like, oh, lovers who get confused and then run around and then everybody gets married at the end. And also, actually, I'm really into A Merchant of Venice when I wake up and I'm just feeling particularly seriously anti-Semitic that day. I'm like, let's do some Merchant of Venice.
I went to see that at the university here.
Which?
Merchant of Venice.
Oh, Merchant of Venice?
Yeah.
Nice. Who got to play the Jew?
Well, I don't remember now.
Oh.
But
in the movie, it's Al Pacino. And it's weird.
Well, it was actually the first time I'd been exposed to it at all. I'd never read it.
Yeah.
So I didn't know anything about it, really. And I went to see it. And the production was very cool. Yeah. I think it was actually the first Shakespeare production I'd ever seen. But I really didn't like the play. You know,
no, I am not a fan of it.
The acting was good. You know, there were a lot of good things about it. But by the end, I was not happy with it.
It's a subject of its time, but it really is hardcore anti-Semitic. And more than that, it's a really kind of dark and disturbing story that's supposed to be a comedy. And it's awkward. And it's just not, no. Well, that's actually another thing about The Tempest. And I know, you know, you're going to run into this stuff, but I'm just white enough and liberal enough that I felt uncomfortable. In The Tempest, there's Caliban, who is the weird sort of half-fish, half-man, monstrous thing that Prospero, whatever, has enslaved, who used to be the only thing on the island. And then when they showed up, she enslaved him. And in this, Jamon Honsu, the African guy, who's like the African guy in every movie right now. He was Papa Midnight in Constantine.
Okay.
He was, oh God, what else has he been in? He's an incredible actor, but he's very, very black and has a very distinct African accent.
Mm-hmm.
And he played Caliban in this, and he was done up in like mud and stuff like this. And he's the only black guy in the whole damn thing. And I was uncomfortable, and I don't necessarily fault the movie, although I wonder if they were shooting for that. But it was just, I don't know. I was like, I'm sure it's fine, but I'm too white and liberal to feel okay with it. And so that was weird, too. But he did a great job. He was really good. He's always really good. I love him. He's an amazing actor.
Yeah, I didn't see any movies. Pretty much the only thing I do... You ask me how my week is. Well, I pretty much... Right now, I'm working on my novel a lot. And sometimes when I get burnout working on that, which is happening quite a bit for some reason with this novel, I'll work on something else. But I don't think that any of the little projects I'm doing are interesting to talk about. So,
but what is something else? Because, like, as near as I can tell, you're getting nowhere on the novel. So literally, you're just, like, staring at a computer screen 16 hours a day?
By getting nowhere on the novel, what's really happening is I'll start writing and then I'll...
Delete.
No. I'll get to a character that I need to kind of introduce and have them interact with other characters, and I stop and realize I don't know this character well enough to really do this. I don't know why the first two novels were easier. I related to the characters that I wrote a lot better, for one thing. But for another, a lot of these characters, and the way this novel is laid out, the characters can't be quite as mysterious. In the first novels, there were characters that came in and you weren't really supposed to know very much about them.
Oh, yes, that was sort of a theme in both of them.
Yes. Well, in this one, this story is answering a lot more questions. You know, the first two books are really all about bringing up questions, not about making any type of answers. And this book is going to do the same thing, but it's going to answer some of its own questions. It's going to answer some questions brought up by the first two stories. So it's just, you know, it's just more involved. So I spent most of the progress I've been making on the story lately is not so much pages as it is background and things that won't even make it into the book, but that I have to know if I'm going to write a convincing character and whatnot. But it's very involved. It involves a lot of research and stuff, which I enjoy doing, but sometimes I get frustrated that I'm not actually adding pages, so I'll work on something else. And you know what kind of things I do, because I sent you that
oh, shit. That thing that I totally haven't looked at yet. Oh, my God.
I sent you what I took a karaoke. You didn't listen to it at all?
I have not touched it.
Well, I don't
it,
know if
so
I want to talk about
you,
it because
you
it's
said
kind of a
you
surprise.
Didn't. And this is a problem. If you send me stuff at work, I'll check my email at work, but I won't full on like read big articles or watch videos, and so I'll save it and then I'll totally forget about it later.
Well,
so
basically
that.
It's a song and I'm singing on it.
It was an MP3 file, so I figured that much.
Yes, it's and there's some karaoke music and I'm singing some lyrics that I mostly wrote, and I don't want to give it away because I think part of what makes it fun is that you don't know what it's going to be. So
oh my God, John Oliver, the British comedian, before he came to this country, was doing a radio show, and apparently one time he took the Queen does a Christmas speech every year, and he took the Christmas speech and replayed it with background music of R. Kelly's I Believe I Can Fly.
Oh, wow.
I know, and the royal family actually issued an official complaint. It was hilarious.
Really?
Yes. But they didn't actually go through with it, because as soon as he heard that, he was like, can I get that in writing? And then they kind of backed off because they realized that it was not having the effect that they wanted, because he was just like, that would be awesome to officially have that. I've been listening to a lot of Nerdist. I always listen, especially the day of a podcast, to get me in sort of zone. And I listened to the Nathan Fillion one today.
Oh, I didn't know there was a Nathan Fillion one.
Yeah, that's because you don't listen. People need to listen to this. This podcast is awesome. Not this one. Nerdist. Not this one.
Well, didn't he recently sort of buy or somehow acquire or I don't know what? There's something about Serenity.
Oh, God.
That he's...
Here's the thing. This came up today. He said in an interview one time that if, purely hypothetically, he won $300 million in the lottery, he would totally buy the rights to Firefly and put it on the internet and make more episodes. This has turned into a fan-driven campaign to raise $300 million for Nathan Fillion to buy Firefly. This is a bad idea, and it should be stopped. He even said in this podcast episode, he's like, I will only do it if I win the lottery and win that, because people should not be giving their hard-earned money for that, and if we raise $300 million, we should be putting it towards a decent cause rather than buying a TV show with it, because that's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. More money than a lot of...
Stop!
More money than a lot of decent causes raise. But
yes.
But I read something somewhere that wasn't really about that. I knew about that. But that there was some other thing. Well, I don't remember enough about it to speak about, so I probably shouldn't have brought it up. But that there was some other development and that he and Joss were going to do something with it. They weren't going to make new episodes, though. It was going to be something else. Or maybe they were. I don't know. You haven't heard anything about that? Because if
no.
you haven't heard, then it probably,
no.
probably isn't anything.
So... There you have it, folks. William saw something that probably is nothing that he can't remember.
Well, that's another thing is during the week I'm working on my projects. And of course, you know, I do things with my family and stuff, but that's just normal family stuff. I don't watch a lot of movies, I don't watch a lot of television, I don't play a lot of video games. I don't have a lot to talk about, you know, that's
but if you see stuff on the internet, just write it down. Like, I wrote down several things to talk about today, and then I lost it after I came home.
Yeah, I guess I could have written down that thing about, you know...
Whatever Nathan Fillion did
with Joss
Whedon.
I guess I just figured you would know that, and you would bring it up if it was...
I don't know everything.
What?
I just play
one
on TV.
I was going to make a joke about it, but I just couldn't keep a straight face.
So, yeah, we're about a half hour. Maybe we should take out the hat.
Yeah, we probably should.
We went a little long this time because people, we just have so much love to give. It's awesome in this new setup with the microphone. I'm like leaning on my own elbow. Does it look like I'm supremely bored, like through the whole thing, kind of?
No, it looks.
I get that feel like I'm just laying there, like, oh God, more podcast.
It looks casual,
but yeah, I'm very laid back as I'm doing this. Okay, I'm gonna get the hat though.
We really need to pay more attention to the hat because it does get jealous
of
us just talking, and we're not talking about what we're supposed to be talking about, which is what it tells us to talk about.
We're gonna suffer the wrath of the hat. Wait, you're supposed to draw.
Well, I don't know what the hat will do. It's magical. You know, magic is unpredictable.
Yeah, but it's a magic hat of talking, not of beating the shit out of you.
Who knows what else it can make happen? It has its own email address.
That is pretty magical.
Yeah. So what else can it do? You just have to understand. I'm not used to all this magic, so I'm a little, you know, I come from...
You're scared of the hat, aren't
I come
you?
From an ignorant, backward people.
You're scared of the hat, aren't you?
Yes. A little bit. You know, my people would tie it to a pole and
burn the hat. The hat's a witch. Burn the hat.
So, you know, I got to get used to it.
That's awesome. And so, in the 18th century, hundreds of hats were burned at the stake.
For making people talk. The hat tells me that Michelle wants to know what the best way is to brew a proper cup of tea.
Okay.
And by proper, I presume we mean the English way. But not necessarily. Maybe the Chinese way.
I always assume proper means with your clothes on.
Oh. that's probably a good way for you to interpret it.
Which means I have no idea, because that's not how I brew tea.
The best way to brew a proper cup of tea.
I only brew my tea in nude.
Yeah, that's more information.
And it's complicated. It involves ropes and pulleys.
All right, back to the question at hand.
No one can see us, eh? So, like, you don't even know if we're nude, eh? Okay, proper cup of tea. I have always done it wrong. I am the Philistine that likes my tea strong, so I put the tea bag in there and leave it the whole time I'm drinking it.
Okay. Well, the whole time you're drinking it. Oh.
Yes. So it gets stronger and stronger and stronger until eventually it can lift my full body weight.
Well, how is one supposed to do it? I actually don't drink very much
tea. Well, I don't know. If you watch on TV and stuff, you take the tea bag and you like dunk it in there a few times and then you get rid of it. And the tea is done. But the old kind of joke about it was that the British always like their tea stronger. And I remember in particular watching a rerun of Laugh-In. I watched a lot of reruns of Laugh-In. I don't know why. And they had, I'm going to say, no, it wasn't Peter Sellers. It was somebody British who at the time was famous, who was on the show, and they had this little bit where he finished drinking this cup, and he hands it to one of the regulars, and he says, thanks for the cup of tea. He says, no problem. He says, but it was awfully weak. And he's like, oh, see, we've always wondered, you're British, so we should ask you, like, you know, how long really should you steep the tea? And he says, well, you remember the tea that all the colonists dumped into the Boston Harbor? And he says, yeah. He says, well, that should be just about ready. Now, to be fair, this was like in the 60s, so it's been 50 more years. So it's even funnier now.
You lived in Britain, though, for a short period
of time. Yes, but I drank beer.
You didn't have tea there at all?
I did, yeah. But, I mean, it wasn't a big
Well, how did they serve? I mean, my understanding is, you know, the
when you get
the bag
served
is, like,
tea, it's already brewed.
Yeah, but yeah. is the tea bag still in the pot when they bring it to
Usually
you?
Usually there's not a bag. Ezzy really wants to get into sound mixing. Traditionally, if you go, like, to a tea house or have a pot of tea or whatever, I don't believe there is any bag. They put the leaves in there. And then the pot has, like, a screen so that the leaves won't come out.
Oh.
So they're just loose in there.
So there's some quantity of leaves they put in there. And then they heat up the water while the leaves are in it?
No. Well, I believe, again, didn't actually see it, didn't go into the kitchen. But, like, there used to be a tea house in the town I grew up in. They put boiling water in there. Put tea leaves in the bottom. Put boiling water in there. And then bring it to the table, and then if you're smart, you let it steep for a while.
Okay.
So you just let it sit there for a few minutes at least.
I see. So you kind of get to decide.
Yes, theoretically. And you can other ways too, because if you put milk in it and stuff like that.
Well, do you think...
But yeah, I think the proper way is you get a teapot and you put loose tea in there and then you pour boiling water into the pot. This isn't the kind you have on the stove. I mean, you can use the kind you have on the stove, but pour it into the teapot and then you let it sit for a while.
And it kind of depends on how strong you want it, how long you let it sit, maybe how much you put in to begin with.
Yes, potentially.
But then, of course... proper tea is actual tea. I mean, tea refers to a very specific kind of leaf that you use to brew. It's not.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people drink, they think of tea anymore as various kinds, herbal teas, white teas, green teas, black teas, whatever.
That was the one thing in this book I read, or the series of books I read called the Detective Inspector Chen novels. They're kind of good. I like them. But anyway, they're these supernatural things. But they're set in China, basically. And there were so many, like, people were always having tea. And it was so interesting, the different kinds. That's where I learned about, like, gunpowder green and stuff like that. And all these different weird oolong and stuff like that. I've had oolong before, but I was just fascinated by all the different types that there were of tea. Because I just think of black and orange pekoe, which is what we think of as just normal black tea. And then green tea and...
I don't know a terrible much. I don't know very
I've
much
had
about
some, I'm tea, a big but... fan of jasmine tea. I've had Lapsang Souchong, which is what we refer to as wet dog hair tea, because it smells and tastes like wet dog hair would smell. But it's not bad as a taste. It smells like that, but the taste is different. But it's a very acquired taste.
About the only exposure I have to tea is not to actual tea, it's to herbal teas, which are not technically tea.
Yeah.
Herbal brews, I guess you could say.
I like some. I'm a big fan of Earl Grey. English breakfast is probably my favorite. Like if I'm stuck on a desert island with only one kind of tea, that would probably be it. I drink a lot of iced tea because I'm not big on hot drinks, but I kind of have a thing for like milk teas and chais. So like when we go out to Indian, I'll get like a cup of hot masala tea. And I really like that. And Ezzy, you need to go someplace.
It's really unusual. She didn't really come out here the first two times we did this.
Yeah.
But the
maybe
last time
she's getting used to you.
This time. Oh, it's me, huh?
Or maybe she was like, they're just screwing around, but now she's like, oh, it's going to be a real thing. I should get in on the ground floor. She wants to be famous.
Yeah.
Because we're blown up.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can keep doing this. I hate our listeners so much.
Do you think the hat probably would like us to draw another?
I think you're too concerned about what the hat wants.
I told you.
I know. And I laughed. Okay, I'm going to draw a question out of the hat. I don't like that one. Let's try a different one. Oh, wait, this isn't video, so I should say I didn't actually see it. I felt one in my hand. Okay.
No, that was a good question. I liked it. I learned a lot from that question.
This question has no name attached to it, and I got the sense that this should have a name attached, but I don't know why. Does magic have a place in the job hunting process? Where and how? No, nowhere, not at all. No.
Magic.
Yes.
Well, that's an interesting question because...
I suppose if you are a magician, like a stage magician, it would definitely be involved.
A huge part to play. My thinking on this is that if magic is something that you believe in as a element of the universe, that it's probably going to have something to do with everything. So,
yeah, from the perspective of assuming that this is one of my neo-pagany friends... magic in that concept is just energy directed by will. So yes, it would have there, but I suspect it's the same sort of thing. Like if you're trying to be ethical about your magic, you don't do a love spell. You don't do a spell to make somebody feel a certain way. You would do a spell to make yourself feel more confident and more attractive. So in the case of job hunting, you could do one to try and encourage your own ambition and your own determination and your own professionalism in interviews and things like
that. So this may be an ethics question, really.
Well, in general, I believe that with magic, it should primarily be inward focus unless you have express permission. So if you say to your employer, so would you mind if I cast a spell to make you want to hire me? Although I would say, even if they say yes, I think whatever the potential benefit of that spell is outweighed by the amount of, holy shit, what is wrong with this person we just interviewed that you would accumulate by asking them that.
But to look at it that way, though, it sort of presumes that one can wield magic in such a way that it's going to have an influence on a person that they're not aware of.
And
I mean, and some people probably aren't sure that even who believe in magic, who there are probably some people who don't think that's necessarily possible.
Theoretically, I mean, there's going to be people who believe all sorts of stuff with this.
Well, let me give you an example. Even with subliminal messages, okay?
Yeah.
The last time I looked at any research on this, it did suggest that subliminal messages sort of make it through without the person being aware, but there's no proof or no evidence to suggest that they mean anything to the person. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're sitting in a theater and it's before the movie and they're showing the concession stand and everything and Coca-Cola flashes, you know, subliminally to try to get you to buy a Coca-Cola. The research suggests that you are thinking about Coca-Cola when you weren't before, but you're not any more likely to want a Coca-Cola or to get up and buy a Coca-Cola. Just because it's flashing in your mind, yeah, and you don't know where it's from, it doesn't lead you to actually doing anything about
well,
it.
Well, but in this point, then we get into traditional job hunting stuff, which common wisdom on that front would say, if I can keep myself, you're the prospective employer, if I can keep my name or face or both in your mind, not associated with, oh, he came in and set fire to my desk, you know, but in another way, that's a good thing. Because if you are remembering me and thinking about me, you are more likely to hire me than if you forgot who I am.
That's true.
So I suppose there's some to that. But I mean, yeah, the whole, again, magic as a product of will, it's how much you could impose your will upon other people. But in the circles I hang out with, it becomes somewhat moot. Because ethically, you don't want to do that anyway.
Gotcha.
You don't want... It's because magic is a subliminal and even unconscious to many people things, it's very non-consensual to do that. And therefore not cool. So I would say, yeah, you could use magic in the job hunting process, but as with many things like this, it would be inward focused. You would do magic to make yourself more confident, more ambitious, more determined, more professional, more attractive to whatever position it's going to be, so that you look more like a technical supervisor than you did before.
Do you think, though, this makes me think of sort of the culture of business and American business in particular. In that culture, people are generally encouraged to use whatever advantage they think they might have, you know, pretty much regardless. I mean, aside from ethics gets really slippery in business. You know what I'm saying?
Ethics isn't involved generally in modern business practices.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, sometimes something that we would think is unethical in any other context is actually respected even by the people who are at the losing end of that ethical situation.
I am sure you could find a pretty decent chunk, well, of business people that if you could convince them of the existence of magic and its ability to be wielded,
I think,
by individuals towards other individuals, would totally be like, dude, make him hire you. And would think that was awesome. I am saying, fuck those guys.
Okay.
They are bastards, and they are not your real friends.
Oh, that's a good one. Well, yeah. I suppose it depends on who you're asking the question to, because, you know, different people with different worldviews have different ethical, you know, stands on such things. And, you know, we all must judge for ourselves, I guess, what ethical standard is appropriate.
The question, and this is going to sound so offensive, but what do I care? The question is essentially, well, no, this is not the question. But for all intents and purposes for our discussion of it, the question is quite the same as, is it a good idea to buy a unicorn as a pet? Let me explain. First of all, you have to do the acceptance of belief in unicorns.
Yes.
And then you have to do how well you think that would work as a pet. And the spectrum is going to be all over the place. So all we can do is say what we personally think. This is not a question that we can give a particularly empirical answer for.
No, but it's insofar as it's an ethical question, you know, it can be talked about in a lot of different ways and putting it in different ethical contexts. You know, and it really can get you started talking about ethics or the lack thereof in business in general, and why there is such a thing.
That does bring up another point. It's only an hour show.
Oh, that's right. But ethics is one of our favorite topics to talk about. I don't know if you've noticed that.
No. Ethics is one of your favorite topics to talk about. Porn is one of my favorite topics to talk about.
One of, but then ethics comes, doesn't it come right after porn? Maybe not.
Certainly doesn't come right before porn.
Obviously. I'm finding that out as the program continues day by day.
I think usually the viewer comes right after porn.
Oh, okay.
That's Did nice. Anybody get that joke? Yeah. Okay.
Unfortunately, yes.
Come on, you were saying comes after porn. We were going to go down this road at some point.
No, that's what I'm saying. Don't include me in this.
You started us down this. You said the phrase comes after porn. Oh, you're the best straight man ever.
Moving on.
Sometime I'm going to tell you about the world's best punchline. Mangia la porte, eat the door. Eat the door. Great line. Today on Facebook, I posted a line from a story somebody had told me in college. And it was awesome because it was a really random line. And I was trying to figure out who in college would remember it because it was like a funny story that we often repeated. And, like, within 5 minutes of posting it, the person who originally told the story commented. And nobody else, including people we went to college with, got it. And I was like, that was awesome.
This was the... I think I saw it. This was the thing...
Take the bat into the woods.
Oh, the bat, yeah.
If the bat is sick, the bat will die. If the bat is well, the bat will fly away. Do not worry.
And that means something significant to you and one other person.
No, there's several people. They just don't remember. My friend Kate in college, her mom, not in college, but Kate's mom once had a bat that had like flown into their house. Or anyway, they had caught this bat like on their property. Like there was a bat and they had to do something about it. So they caught it and they didn't know what to do about it. So they called the local like vet animal control thing, mm-hmm. which was actually on this college campus. It was part of like a veterinary school thing or whatever. And they got this guy with this intensely heavy Indian accent and asked what they should do about it. And his entire advice was take the bat into the woods. If the bat is sick, the bat will die. If the bat is well, the bat will fly away. Do not worry.
Just like that, with all that just inflection like that, and everything. Yes.
And so this became a thing for us because I drank a lot in college. So it came up a lot.
It sounds like advice you could use in all kinds of situations,
Absolutely. Take your child into the woods.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Child rearing advice.
Nice. Take your old car into the woods. If your car is sick, your car will die. If your car is well. Oh, yeah, no, I do like this. This could be a
employee management. All kinds of things.
Okay, I think we should try one more question.
Okay. Or topic.
That, yes. Quements is the phrase that the Nerdist has started using. It's a question and a comment, you know, quements.
This is also written in like a letter. I kind of like it when they do that. Ooh. Dear Hat, I think the hat kind of likes that.
Mm.
Stuart, and all he has to say is, Charlie Sheen, discuss.
Stuart. Now, yeah, you were worried this was going to come up.
I was so proud of us. Here we were.
Not having mentioned it.
On the fourth episode, and we hadn't mentioned Charlie
now,
Sheen.
Now, to be fair, Stuart is Welsh. So.
What's that got to do with anything?
Oh, so much.
I'm about.
The Welsh. Have you ever
I'm
heard.
I'm about 1/16th Welsh myself.
Have you ever heard of a troglodyte, the subterranean creature?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, those actually come around from the first time people saw the Welsh. Anyway, that's a totally different topic for another time. Charlie Sheen. The problem is, it's kind of at the end now.
Well.
He's had his freak out. I mean, he's done all of his crazy shit. And now he's actually doing his tour. You know, he's touring.
Well, I don't know a lot about popular culture or what's going on. And so once in a while, when I hear a lot of talk about something, I'll check it out. Usually, that's why I won't check it out, because everyone's talking about it, because I think, I don't even know anything about that. But this whole Charlie Sheen thing, I watched a few clips from the first little interview he did, and it looked to me like he was just putting the interviewer on. I mean, you know, it didn't look to me like he was serious at all. He knew how outlandish and outrageous he was sounding, and he was really trying to get
that's what it seems to be
kind of reaction. So I wasn't sure, you know, people talking about, wow, he's really crazy or gone off the rails or something, and I just thought, this guy, he knows exactly what he's doing, and he's just getting the response
that's
he wants.
Why I kept paying attention. Because, like, when Randy Quaid went all apeshit, I eventually had to stop paying attention because I'm like, this isn't funny anymore. This is just mental illness. And now I'm sad.
Randy Quaid.
Oh, God. Randy Quaid's a lunatic.
Well, what's...
But Charlie, I'm convinced, has decided this is his career move. And I find that fascinating and hilarious.
But it reminds me of... what was the comedian who kind of did this first in a big way? Andy Kaufman. Yeah.
Yeah, but see, Andy Kaufman was trying to get at what he thought was the heart of comedy, and he thought that had a lot to do with making people uncomfortable and making people question things. Charlie is trying to keep attention, because otherwise we would all stop paying attention.
Well, I guess the conclusion I drew, and it was, and this was a conclusion that was based on very little, by the way. Yes. I just watched a few things, and I just concluded right away, okay, this guy's not crazy. This is what he's going for. And so I just thought, well, he's decided he's not getting enough out of this TV show that he's been on, or he wants to leave it, but there's a contract or whatever. He wants to do something completely different, and he's figured out how to do that. You know, just make everyone really worried about him or mad at him or whatever, get fired, and then get more attention than he's ever had before and probably make more money than he's ever
made before. And I don't know that getting fired and leaving the show was originally part of the plan.
Well, how could it not
be? I think at a certain point he just said fuck it and thought he'd run with it. And then when he got fired, he really decided to run with it, because it didn't get as crazy till later.
Well, yeah, but he was...
Like, we didn't get the Adonis DNA and the tiger blood and the Vatican warlock shit until later.
Yeah, that's true. But he was, you know, criticizing people he worked with. And, I mean, you know, he was burning a lot of bridges pretty early.
Yeah, yeah. But remember, he's a coke-fueled motherfucker. Like, I mean, yeah. Maybe he's not on it now, but he's spent a lot of time recently on a lot of coke. And so that can be a part. But I do believe that what he's doing now is very conscious. And he's on tour now, and he started in Detroit, and he got his ass booed because there was nothing to it, and he just went up there and ranted. And so it sort of has altered now. Like, when he went to Chicago, he changed a little bit because people just weren't into it. They bought tickets, and then they were like, but wait, it's just a guy being an asshole. In an unfunny way.
Well, they probably expected something a little different than what they saw on television.
I mean, yeah, so apparently at Detroit it just bombed. Well, so he sort of adjusted.
Do you suppose the people who are buying these tickets, like me, they look at this and they think, oh yeah, he's...
Not like you.
Well, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's like kind of like that internet phenomenon of trolls, you know? I mean, they log on to forums and stuff, and they just do things to annoy people, and some people are really entertained by that for some reason.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's what people thought, that he was like, oh, here he is on television. He's saying things that people don't say. He's doing things that people don't do, and it's making people crazy. We think that's really funny. I would think those people, though, even if they feel like they're in on it, you know, they're kind of – and that makes people feel good when they think they're in on something like that.
Yeah.
Even if they think they're in on it, they expect when they get to a place that they've actually bought tickets for, that's going to be a little bit more than just, you know, throwing out a bunch of garbage.
Possibly. I don't know. I didn't buy a ticket.
I
bought four tickets, but I couldn't make
it. I remember before this started and we talked about – somehow he came up in our conversation, and I told you that, you know, he's everywhere. Everyone's talking about him, and I would like very much for us not to, on purpose, not to talk about Charlie
Sheen. And then the fucking Welsh.
Well, it's okay since a listener, because we love our listeners. We like them to send stuff in. Whatever they want to talk about. If they want to talk about Charlie Sheen, we'll talk about Charlie Sheen.
Were you not here for the last hour?
But you're lying. And if they want us to talk about Charlie Sheen, we'll talk about Charlie Sheen. But but without our listeners asking us to, I wasn't really in favor of it.
I was down with that. okay, we're mostly done. Do you have anything you want to plug? You don't go anywhere or do anything or talk to people, so I'm guessing you don't.
Well, you know, my usual stuff is always out there for people to enjoy and give feedback on, and I'm working on a lot of projects, and whenever I have something new finished, I'll plug that.
Feedback doesn't appear to be our audience's thing.
Oh, I don't know.
But they do. Actually, the questions have been a little bit in upswing, so that's cool.
I hear from people personally from time to time.
I want to replug, because I just love Sushi Cat that much. No, that's not what I want to do. In the first episode, I plugged two podcasts, and I want to replug them because I've been listening to them more now, and I really love them. I do want to plug Happy Jack's RPG podcast. If you are an RPG player, or if you used to be and you kind of want to be again, it's really a great voice and form for those of us who have been into gaming and now are older and kind of have lives. I don't, but I mean, some people my age do. And it's a really good tool for that, sort of get you back into gaming, give you a more grown-up, like, perspective on gaming, and it's just fun, and it's neat, and I like it. And I like to think it has a similar vibe to ours, if we're lucky. And the other one is the Nerdist podcast. I love the Nerdist podcast. It's evolving over time, and it gives you a major insight into, if you're a comedy nerd at all, if you're into comedy and the nature of comedy and what people think is funny. It's a really good show for that. It's had some great guests. Like I said, I've been listening to Nathan Fillion. Will Wheaton was on there, who's my boy. Kevin Smith was on there. Rainn Wilson, lots of great interviews on there. And I find it interesting. It's really an interesting perspective sort of into LA, I think. Because there's a lot of stuff, and the host and everybody lives in LA, and a lot of the show is just sort of talking like we do. It's a little more structured. But so there's all sorts of I've learned so much more about like how TV shows happen and how comedians get their start and stuff that I never knew before. And weird shit like Mindy Kaling, who plays Kelly on The Office, who's a producer on The Office. You know how she started?
No.
When Good Will Hunting came out, she did a play satirizing Good Will Hunting, and it performed in LA, and that was like her, that's how she appeared in the comedy world.
Huh.
And people in LA know her from that. I had, of course, no idea. But I just think it's very interesting, and I think it's funny, and I like it. So more people should listen to it. A lot of people do listen to it, but way more than us. But I just think it's awesome, and you should check it out. And I think that's it. I did want to say also, you know what I would love?
I really don't want to ask.
No, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the listeners. You know what I would love?
I don't think they want to ask either.
We're on iTunes. We're also, our search engine optimization is getting better. If you type in the magical talking hat, even without quotes, we're the first thing now.
Excellent.
It's awesome. But we're on iTunes. I would love an iTunes review. Even just one. Doesn't even have to be good. You can be a one-star review if you want. I don't care what you think of the show. Just somebody go out there and write a review, because our page is so blank and sad. And nobody, it looks like nobody ever watched the show. And I know that at least 12 of you are listening. No, the feed is now pretty, it fluctuates between 12 and 13, but there's pretty solidly 12 subscribers on FeedBurner, and I know of at least 4 or 5 people who get it another way. So I do know we have some listeners, but I would love for somebody to go to iTunes and actually put in a review, even if it's like, I can't believe this massive shit. So,
because Tony's not going to write one because he doesn't do
I
stuff.
I am not.
And I'm not going to.
And
do
I don't
want to
be that guy.
That's just pathetic.
Who reviews his own podcast. Yeah. So I guess what I'm saying to you listeners who I have railed against and spewed my hatred to for so long, do me this favor. Because I'm sure my opinion of you will turn around if you do that.
Unless it makes him do work.
Well, there is that. Also, I could be lying, but I would like that. Anyway, I think that's about it. Next episode, episode 5. So exciting. It's going to be huge. Extravaganza. Episode. It's going to be our quintessential
episode.
Yeah,
it will be, literally.
Yes. quintennial podcast celebration.
Really, a celebration? So, will there be donuts or beverages?
I find that incredibly telling that you hear celebration and the first thing you think is donuts.
It wasn't the first thing I thought, but then immediately...
You thought hookers and blow, didn't you?
No. That's what you think.
Can we get hookers and
I
blow?
I thought cake, ice cream, and balloons, but then I kind of filtered it through, you know, the production values of our show, and I thought,
you
okay,
looked at
donuts.
The budget, and you were like, maybe we can split a
yeah,
donut.
I can think that way.
So no hookers.
I can start big and then whittle it down to what is probably
possibly
manageable.
Possibly we will send a six-pack of crawlers to each of our listeners to eat while they listen to it.
Well, that definitely won't bust the
budget, just have
for
to
sure.
Tune in and find out, so come back then. I think that's it. So disregard the last hour and bye.
Goodbye.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Ant Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.